Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. My guests today are a pair of Aussie twin brothers who are pioneering the concept of wilderness on demand and inviting stressed out office workers, just like me, to get out of the city and experience the bush through their accommodation startup that's called Unyoked. Chris and Cameron Grant build and design mobile off-the-grid cabins in unique locations no more than 2 hours from major cities around Australia. The whole idea is to help people stuck in the 9-to-5 cycle switch off, slow down, and spend a night or two in the wilderness. Chris and Cam were both working corporate jobs and craving the escape of the outdoors, so they left their corporate careers and founded Unyoked in 2017. Inspired by the free-spirited nature of Yosemite in the 70s and Byron Bay in the 80s, their tiny solar-powered and mostly phone-signal-free cabins are located on previously inaccessible locations, and their philosophy is that disconnecting with modern stresses and going back to simplicity is the perfect way to recharge and create balance, something that many of us need this year in particular. And Matthew McConaughey clearly agrees because he jumped on board to design a cabin with Unyoked just last year. 2020 proved to be a challenging year for their business, first with the bushfires and floods, which they had to closely monitor for their properties, and then, of course, through COVID-19 when the Victorian cabins have been completely non-operational. So I want to ask Chris and Cam how this year has made their offering more relevant than ever, with people longing to get away, disconnect and unplug and escape to nature, and how they're working with a captive travel market who at the moment can't go overseas and are now looking more than ever to explore their own backyard. So let's get into it. Cam and Chris Grant, welcome to The Mentor.
Thanks for having us.
You've got twins.
Yep. Twins, yeah.
Who's the oldest?
I'm the oldest, Chris.
That's Chris. Chris, yep. By how much?
By 3 minutes.
3 minutes. And, I know you listeners out there, you probably can't see these two guys. They sort of look like twins, but they definitely look like brothers, but they're definitely not identical. But it's cool that two brothers, and probably more importantly, twins, are in business together. That's pretty cool.
It is, yeah. We've always really worked together in some capacity from when we were doing paper runs at age 7 to working at the movies through high school to working in a call center roles through uni. And we did split up a while there, and Cam went over to Madrid, and I was in Singapore for a part, but then we came back to build this business together.
Can I just go back a little bit? I mean, you come across to me as a couple of sort of pretty cool, chilled guys. Like, you're not your I know Cam was a banker at one stage.
In a past life.
Doesn't look like one now, but but you come across as pretty sort of chilled blokes. You know, like most people would be looking at you thinking yourself, wow, what a great life. You know, this is the dream life. Working with my brother, doing this sort of cool stuff that you're doing. We'll talk about that a bit later. But if I could just go back to when you're a couple of young blokes, I don't know how good your memory is, but how far back do you guys remember? Say, Cam, how far can you remember back hanging out with your brother?
I guess back to kindergarten or before that. Yeah. Like, we were always pretty close. Like, we moved around a whole bunch as kids. So our dad worked for Carlton United Breweries and got promoted as we grew up. So we were born in Darwin, and then we moved to Melbourne, then Sydney, then Perth, then Melbourne, then Sydney. So we've actually got a younger sister, but she's, 4 years younger? So growing up, that's a big gap.
That's a big gap, yeah.
Whereas Chris and I went to a school, Mum always made sure that she put us in different classes so we weren't the twins.
Is that right?
Yeah. Had our separate identities, but we'd always basically bring two groups of friends together and just have this big group of friends, but we'd always have each other, I guess, moving around.
I've always sort of been curious about twins. I mean, I've got a younger brother and younger sister, but they're significantly younger than me. sister's 8 years younger, my brother's 6 years younger. So I, to some extent, I mean, I grew up on my own because, like, as you say, like when I'm six and he's zero, that's a big difference. When I'm 12 and he's six, that's a big difference, you know. And but I didn't sort of have that sort of early relationship. And I guess, you know, when you're really little and you're both there with each other, you know, you probably slept in the same room, bunks or something like that, or opposite each other. Or your mum got everyone ready at the same time. You ate at the same time. You just like did everything at the same time. You might have been in separate classes, but were you really aware of the fact that you're both, that you were twins? Or like, was that a thing in your head? Did you ever compete with each other?
Not so much, because we ended up actually doing complementary stuff. Like we were swimmers, for example. Like I did backstroke, Chris did breaststroke. Chris did short distance freestyle. I did long distance freestyle. And then like we played a lot of sport, but like water polo, we'd play opposing wings. And rugby, we'd play, I was backs, he was forwards.
Yeah, so water polo is, it's a great game to watch. I mean, it's a tough game. I mean, guys rip each other. My brother played water polo and all my sons play water polo, and his sons play water polo. In fact, they formed a water polo team at one stage. The number of blues I saw my brother get in out of the pool was ridiculous. I mean, no, you wouldn't think that about water polo. It's like a bit of like a gentlemanly game. But tell me, I mean, what I want to know is you're in business together now, so you can't compete with each other. But I just automatically would assume that you would have been competitive. I mean, like, what was the big influence on you two growing up? Like, was it mum or dad, or you know, who was it that got you sort of to be so close or kept you so close? I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of our parents are you know, great influences on our life, and there was definitely some careful manoeuvring by them to make sure that, you know, like Cam said, we were in different classes or different sports teams. You know, we did have our own friends.
It sounds like you compliment each other now.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about that in a moment. But it seems like someone place the chess players on the chessboard very, very carefully, sort of maybe hoping you would compliment each other as opposed to anything else. I mean, compliment each other is, in other words, be there for each other in an emotional sense, but be there for each other in a skill sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you did you did breaststroke, you did backstroke,
yeah.
You did distance, he did short in freestyle. We'll talk a little bit later about how you complement each other in business. Mm. But did mum or dad, or do you think that collectively they sort of sat down and strategically said, okay, we've got these two kids here. I'm not forgetting about your younger sister, but let's just look at you two for a moment. We've got these two boys here. You know, when they're down the track, nothing may happen, something may happen. But why don't we sort of make sure that they do complement each other? Do you think that was something that they decided at the time, or do you think it was something that just emerged because you're born naturally with different skills or naturally different characteristics?
Well, nature and nurture always comes down to it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like there's probably elements of both. Like I think definitely nature, we have two like complementary personalities at some
level. You recognize that now?
Yeah, yeah. And growing up as well, I think as well.
So how would you best describe yourself, Cam?
I'm probably a bit more of like a watcher and like a little bit more quiet and think about things.
Observer,
whereas Chris has always been a bit more like outgoing and stuff like that. Yeah.
And would you agree with him, Chris?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah. Yeah. I think we're both on the watcher side to the, you know, hard extrovert side. But yes, yeah, I think looking at both of us, that's.
Well, and if you being someone who participates in the conversation or the energy that's going on.
Yeah.
As opposed to Cam, who sort of sits back and watches. I mean, let's go and talk when you play water polo, for example. Does that mean that you were amongst it all the time and he was waiting for his opportunities?
Yes, actually. I think I would often be in there and I'd look for him because I know where he'd be, and I'd get it to you and then you'd score.
So you set him up.
Yeah.
So you wrestled in the mud and then you just flicked it up him. He went down the sideline.
Yeah. We had a great sort of.
Do you agree with that?
Sometimes, I think. Yeah.
Do you remember our move in water polo? We would start the game like this every time because I would have the position where I swam out for the ball when it got
so
thrown at the start.
Quicker freestyle swim.
Yeah. And so I would swim out, pass to Cam. Cam would know that I'd be down in this corner. He'd pass back to me. Then he'd be back in the middle. Then he'd score. And it happened every time, every game.
Yeah, so you sort of, that's sort of interesting. You knew each other's, you know, your tactics.
Yeah.
How you would react tactically.
Yeah.
That wasn't, you didn't sit down and work that out, did you?
No.
Strategically?
No.
You just knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an instinctive thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just worked.
And do you think your parents knew that?
I don't know. I think they raised us to sort of be our own people. And like that was probably from early on, like mum separating us and not making us the
twins. That's very strategic, by the way.
And yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess we've never really thought about
it.
A
lot of our parents, I mean, I haven't no experience with twins, but I've seen other people, they dress them the same, they put everything's the same. It's around the other way. A lot of other parents say, oh, we've got twins, they're all going to do everything the same. They're going to, blah, blah, blah. And you two now, I look at you, you look like twins to me, but prior to, prior to that, you actually came in as two individuals too, but I can see there's something the same. I mean, this all leads to somewhere, by the way. Everyone probably thinks we're talking a whole lot of horseshit here, but I mean, what's interesting is the fact that you two guys eventually did come together into business, and you obviously do complement each other in the way you do business, and I want to talk about the way you do business.
Mm.
But all these things come back to start from some beginning. They have a beginning, and I'm trying to establish where are the beginnings of what you do, because there's a lot of people in business who go and want to go into business, want to be a startup, or want to copy you with, oh, wow, these guys have done something cool.
Mm.
And copying is about having a better understanding of yourself and who you are and who's your best complement and who's your worst complement and where your skill sets are and what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are and how do you play to your strengths and train your weaknesses, because they're the fundamentals about being good in business, particularly when it comes to doing a startup or coming up with a new idea. And you guys obviously are born lucky in that, like your business partners, but you're sort of partners for life in some respects. You came out at the same time. You epitomize to me the example of recognizing my strengths and weaknesses and how do I get things complemented.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes right back to, when you were being sent to school. And as you said, your mum put you in different classes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And as you're saying to me, Chris, Cam knew that if you took off in the water polo game when the ball was thrown up and you would sprint against the other guy on the other side, you were backing yourself to get there quicker than the other bloke on the other side, and you were going to flick it over to your brother who's going to be maybe to your left if you're on the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
You flick it over to him on the left.
Yep.
And he knew that you were going to be further ahead so he could flick it back over to his right. Yeah, I mean, that's how business is.
Exactly, yeah. I think it's an interesting point you make that there are tenets of successful businesses that you can trace all the way back to childhood.
Totally.
And there are skills that you draw on that come from that far back. And definitely with Cam and I, there are things like that.
You always got to look at where your strengths and weaknesses are. I know people will say, I want to get into business, but they haven't got a clue what they're good at and what they're shit at.
Mm.
I've got a brother who's in business with me, and I often say, I cut, he sews.
Mm.
And I have a look at my own four sons, and I look at the different types of businesses they're in, and I can trace right back. I'm not surprised what they're doing now, because I can trace right back to when they're little kids.
Yep.
These strengths and weaknesses that they have, and they've actually somehow you just end up falling into the right spot. And if you're going to be good at business, you've got to be able to recognize, most importantly, your weaknesses, because you've got to complement that. My weakness is I'm hopeless at the detail. My brother's strength is he's unbelievably good at the detail. Yep. Who do I trust most? My brother.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, if I put it to you, probably the most trustworthy person in business anyway, I would say, is probably each other.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly.
You know you can rely on him.
Exactly.
You know his weaknesses, and you know what's going to happen if he gets put under intense pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how to backfill. That's important.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I've always been in partnership with people. So people say, oh, well, I do it on my own. But I like to be in partnership with somebody because I'm acutely aware of my weaknesses. So anyone out there listening, to be successful in business, in my view, you need a partner, or you need a person is in your business who you know is going to be there for the long term.
Yeah.
This is the perfect partnership I'm looking at right here. I mean, from my point of view, my brother's a perfect partner.
Yeah.
But this is even more perfect because, literally you're 3 minutes apart. But you two know everything about each other. You know where you went to school together. You know who your friends were. You know what you ate. You slept in the same room. You probably interchange clothes,
Yeah.
Hopefully not girlfriends, but, no. you got the same mates.
You weren't close enough. Yeah.
You weren't close enough.
No, well, different taste there.
We don't
as
look
well,
close
yeah.
enough, yeah.
yeah, yeah.
To be able to do the switcheroo.
Yeah. So when you finished school, what happened? What was the course of action for each of you?
But going back, I didn't really know what I was going to do. So I characteristically just covered my bases and enrolled into a science and art double degree at University of Sydney, and then dropped the science part after like a semester and just went surfing and finished the rest of the degree, then transferred into international relations. And then after that—
At Sydney?
Yeah, at Sydney. So finished that, knew I wanted to go traveling around, but also wanted to do something that, I guess, laid a bit of framework for the future. So I arranged an internship at the Australian Embassy at Madrid and basically emailed all the embassies in Europe and said, hey, are you guys doing internships? And a lot of them didn't answer. Some said no, whittled it down. Spain said, yep, if you speak Spanish. So then I went and did a Spanish.
You don't speak Spanish.
Well, I do now, but I did a Spanish course quickly. Passed the test, went over there.
Before you got there?
Yeah.
You can say, yeah, I do speak Spanish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, no, no.
That was it.
But that's sort of fairly, shows a fair bit of initiative.
Yeah.
And then after, how did you end up in banking then?
Yeah. So I'd never call myself a banker, but then I was doing some stuff with Austrade over at the embassy, so yep. like market entry strategies and things like that, and sort of got interested in that aspect of business because I never thought I'd do like classical business. I wanted to do diplomacy or something like that because I was always interested in history and then looking at multiple systems and how things work. But then that got me interested in strategy. So then I went back to the University of Sydney because I still didn't know what I really wanted to do. So more uni was the answer, as with lots of people.
Yeah, unfortunately. So more hex.
Yep. There's a big debt there. So I did a master's of strategy at Sydney Uni, got into an industry placement program at CommBank, and then sort of hopped and skipped my way around to the strategy department. And that's where I was there for the last few years.
Right. And then what about you, Chris?
I took a year off. First, I also didn't know what I wanted to do. I toyed with a number of different courses and paths and sort of looked at architecture closely and wanted something with a creative angle, but in the end settled for a business degree because it was broad.
That's a long way from architecture.
Yeah, yeah. So I went with marketing finance in the end. The marketing still had a bit of a creative angle to it, which I liked, but I deferred it and went traveling and then I came back to Sydney and I moved through my course, but slowly. I did part-time and I worked a sales role in a call center at the same time. And then from there, I moved to Woolworths and I joined the sort of corporate side of Woolworths, Woolworths Liquor, and worked in digital marketing there. And then came to a point where I'd had enough of working for a big company with the bureaucracy and so then decided to move to the startup world where I could get a little bit more exposure to how to build a business and to people creating things from the ground floor.
When you say your startup world, do you mean did you have a startup or did you work for people who look after startups?
I went to work for a business that gave me a bit of exposure on two sides. It was a fast growth startup itself. The company was called General Assembly and they're out of New York and they were an ed tech company. And so they were an alternative post-grad education teaching short form skills-based courses in emerging fields like digital marketing and coding and data science and areas like that. Because it was a fast growth startup, I got to sort of to live and breathe it and see how a company was built while it was expanding internationally quickly. But also their business model was to really cement themselves in the startup hub of the city that they were building. So there was a lot of talks by entrepreneurs and founders on how to start this and how to do that. So, you know, I sucked all of that up while I was there. And then they asked me to move to Singapore to help grow the new market over there. So I shipped over to Singapore and spent a little bit of time there building the business there and then you know had to quit to come back and work on Unyoked.
So like okay, so that's pretty interesting to me from both of your points of view because Bishop and I know where you landed. And how important is being in Singapore or is it being in Europe or is it traveling?
Mm-hmm.
And how important is it for you too, Cam? Having lived in another place, the exposure to new ideas and new concepts,
yep.
And from my point of view, at least being inspired,
yeah.
You know, that doesn't exist back home.
Yeah.
How important is that?
Yeah.
Because there's so many people up there with great ideas and just by sheer numbers, you're going to see more stuff. How important was that to you two guys?
Super important.
You didn't know it at the time, I guess.
No. Like quickly afterwards, but it's about having wider perspective, I think, because especially like I moved to Madrid by myself. And was living in a house with like 8 Spanish people forced to speak Spanish and had these kind of two lives, like embassy life during the day and then Spanish, like generally partying, but social life at night.
Yeah.
But that, you know, it forces you to open your mind. You sort of can't fall back on the, I guess, the security of back home and your usual behaviors and ways. So it does open
Which
that
can
up.
Actually hold you back to some extent being at home like that. Going through that process, go to school, finish HSC, I'm off to the university doing a law degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, studying, doing well, getting my high distinctions, blah, blah, blah. And now what am I going to do? I go and work for a law firm and I get into that process in terms of, you know, working my way up the firm to one day become a partner, but I'm working, you know, 80 hours a week.
Mm.
And then by the time I'm 40, I think, hang on, look at these two guys. What's happened to my life? I mean, I'm not saying one's better than the other, but I'm just pointing it out to the people listening to the show.
Yeah.
There are different ways to get to startup world.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of guys, that was me. At 40, I started up a business. Called Wizard. okay? Because I said, oh, I've got a lot of experience. I know how to do this. I'm going to have a crack. I wish I had done it much earlier. But I was in 20 years, I was in a system. I was systemized.
Mm-hmm.
I was institutionalized.
Yeah.
And the whole time, my own personality is that I didn't really want to be there. Yep. But, you know, yep. we're going back a long time ago. There was – people didn't do that sort of stuff. They didn't do what you did, what you guys do today. But still, I had to go through the system, and the whole time I was wanting to break out. The whole time. It was very frustrating for me.
Yeah.
There's different ways to get to where you're going to get to, but it's interesting. Like travel, to me, was one of the greatest advantages of working in the firm that I work for, because they used to send me around the world. I just had to do stuff. I was a banking guy, so I had to go around looking at banking transactions around the world. And as a result of that, I got to get on an aeroplane, and then which in itself was cool. And then I got to stay in hotels, which is in which was completely different to me, and meet people. And see, I just saw things.
Yeah, I think the people part's a big part of it. It really helps you understand people as well.
Yeah. Girl, look what they're doing.
Yeah,
how important is that for you? Like that process, that available ideas, and how did that land you to making this decision to set up what you've set up, this new business? Did you see one of these little small places, these little joints that you guys built?
We did. We saw something in like there had been a start of what people were calling a movement in the US where people were downsizing and moving away from just curiosity. And I was actively looking for our idea to build something.
So. But did you have an idea? Let's build little joints.
No. So I had a blank canvas, and I was just looking for a idea, you know, and this happened to answer some problems that Cam and I were facing ourselves.
What were the problems?
Essentially similar to you, we'd found ourselves in these roles that didn't feel like we were meant for them, and it was having an effect on us personally and mentally. We were in the office way too much, we were on a computer way too much, and we weren't living our lives how we used to, which was spending a lot of time outdoors. So we wanted to get outdoors more, but easily. And we knew that that would help help alleviate some of the other problems that we were feeling.
Let's explain a little bit, explore it, dig into it a little bit. What were you feeling?
Yeah, it was less about what was there, what we're feeling, is more about what was missing. And that's like coming back to the travel aspect. It was that we were trying to recreate. Like we'd, you know, had the freedom of growing up in Perth. It's exactly what you mentioned. Yeah. You know, we grew up like riding our bikes in, you know, year three down the main road to school for like half an hour. You wouldn't.
St. George Terrace.
Princess Road.
Oh, yeah.
Not in the city. Yeah. But you wouldn't hear that over here. And like, it's just more hectic, less free. Like you're more, there's conventions you have to follow. And like when we, all throughout uni and early work, you know, we'd go traveling for 3 months a year at the end of the year during uni break, or even go overseas twice. And those trips would be the ones where you'd leave your phone and your wallet at home and you just go. And you know, you'd have nothing to do. You'd have totally open mind. You just wouldn't have to live by anyone else's expectations. And then gradually as we were working, like me in the bank, definitely didn't fit. My hair wasn't this long, but it was a bit longer. And walking around there and like, you know, there's rules that people, I guess, they're not real rules. It's just things that are done because they're done that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sort of started, I guess, banking up. And then we had less ability to go overseas or to get out of the city and really feel that sort of freedom and that perspective.
So did you express it to your brother? Did you ever sort of sit and say, this is, we got to change something. Let's do it now. When did that light just come on and say, that's what we're going to do?
It was pretty simple, wasn't it? I saw something online sort of and sent through a loose concept, and Cam's like, yep, that will work. And I was like, yes, that's awesome.
Well, what'd you see online?
One of these mobile cabins.
Yeah,
and I was like, hey, you know, at the time they weren't in Australia. You know, no one knew what they were. I mean,
did you go looking for it though? Were you looking for one of these mobile cabins, or were you just reading shit and you're just,
I was looking for an idea, to be honest.
But there's not a place called greatideas.com. I mean,
I was on all the sort of, the US tech blogs, all of the crowdfunding platforms, all of the latest news. Exactly.
Drags you into those places.
Yeah.
So is the lesson be curious?
Definitely.
Yeah. And listen to that itch that needs scratching.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because it was a light bulb when it came there, but we weren't looking for the light bulb necessarily. Like there wasn't I guess there wasn't a moment where we're like, yep, let's do it. We just kind of blinked and suddenly we were building cabins. So,
you know, you remind me of D'Artagnan out of the, you know, like, you know, with the
Three Musketeers.
He's got the moustache going on. People can't see this because it's an audio, but Cam looks like D'Artagnan with a mo.
I like it.
Is it like that?
Yes.
It's it a product. It could be a new name, D'Art. Because I think this is important for people listening. So, the point here is this. Cam said there's an itch. There's something I've got to do. I've got to make a change. And the point that Chris is sort of making, and Cam is too, but, well, I did something about it. So I did something. And if you're going to do something about it, do something that's relevant. Be curious. Have an open book for everything.
Yep.
I mean, you weren't particularly looking for accommodation alternatives, but you just happened to come across something, and that just sparked your interest.
Exactly.
And then you flicked it over your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you've got to test these things. I mean, everyone has these great ideas, but you've got to try it on somebody else who you trust. I mean, it might be your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your best friend. It could be some sort of mentor. I mean, whatever. But, you know, you've got to flick it over and say, what do you think of this? And you've got to be prepared to someone say, that is shit. It doesn't work. Well, that's cool because then it needs energy.
Yeah, exactly.
And your energy sometimes won't be enough. But when his energy's down, your energy's up, hopefully, or vice versa, or together, even more powerful if both energies are up.
Yeah.
But if you want to do a startup, acknowledge the itch. Do the research, be curious, have someone to bounce it off and make sure that there's energy in the room.
Yeah.
Because you need someone to bounce off who can help you construct it.
Exactly. We shared it with maybe our 12 closest friends originally early on, and I'd seen it working in the startup community a lot where people had kept their ideas guarded and they were afraid of rejection.
And nothing happens.
And nothing happens, exactly. You know, no one's going to steal it. There's a lot of effort required to take that idea into a creation. So. Yeah, definitely. Tell as many people.
That's important. That's a really important point, Chris. And I make this point a lot. If you've got a good idea, prosecute the shit out of it. Get out there and tell, because you sort of get committed the more you talk about it, by the way. You've got to actually deliver.
Exactly.
But prosecute the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And if you're getting some reflected energy and enthusiasm from people telling about it, that's sort of a bit of an affirmation for you that'll actually drive you a bit further.
Yeah.
By the way, if you prosecute the shit out of it and everybody you tell says that this is a rubbish idea, that could be a signal too that you're not on the right game. But if you're getting the right sort of vibes, you're onto something, and that just gives you a bit of energy to go to the next step. Because, you know, in startup world or new ideas world, and then to go on and say, you need energy. It takes a lot out of you. I mean, this is before you even turn the first sod of soil. Like, you know, just sort of making this thing look like it's interesting. Can I ask you, did you keep your day jobs whilst you were doing this?
Yeah, for the first, year and a half.
Year and a half, yeah.
Okay, that's another thing that's really important. Don't get so carried away by an idea that you're just going to drop everything and you've got no cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have some cash flow. So you got your hustle on the side. You're feeding off the energy of everybody else. You're feeding them energy. You're getting them excited. Have someone you trust, in your case, your brother. And then you've done the curious bit. Then you start to do the research bit and then you start to build up. I mean, how do you build the various layers before you say, okay, we've got something we're going to dive into here. We've got a business.
I don't know if there was that much. Like, I mean, we did the customer research. We asked people, but we kind of almost knew that we were onto something.
Well, how'd you come up with that name, Unyoked?
Like right away.
I mean, I don't even know what it means. What does it mean? Like, tell me.
It's a
cool name, but I don't know what it means. It doesn't mean you got nothing shackling you.
Exactly. A yoke connects an animal to a cart or a plow, and then sort of unyoke the animals to set them free, and we're the animals in the city and we need to be set free.
We, as in all of us.
Yeah. As in us, the people, yeah. And we looked at, what, 100, 200 synonyms of various words that meant something to us. And we wanted the name to be symbolic of,
or tell the story.
Of what we're trying to do. Exactly, yeah.
The name tells the story.
It does. Yeah. And so a lot of people don't know the word because it's a little bit archaic, but that's worked for us too because we've almost created our own verb now and people use it. They say, I'm getting unyoked. And we see it online.
If you can create language, that's a killer. Yeah. It's funny, you know, to some extent, unyoking yourself, in other words, getting the thing off your shoulders, it sort of brings life back to you. And that's sort of what I thought of when I saw Unyoked.
You know,
it's sort of unyoked is about getting rid of the thing that's been on my back, on my shoulders,
exactly.
And just going out and chilling out and just breathing and opening my eyes. And, you know, it's a bit like travel when you're stuck in the office. You know? You know, I just want to travel. It's a bit what Australians are experiencing right now, where they've been stuck. And they're just desperate to get away. And it can make, like, the feeling is right now, I mean, this is perfect for a business like yours, by the way. I mean, these circumstances actually help business like yours because people have a greater realization.
Exactly.
It's time to get away. Mm-hmm. And probably importantly, you know, I'm holding this thing up here. This is called, I got a smart device, my handy. I'm holding it up. This is what you want to get away from.
Yes.
That's the yoke.
Yeah.
It's not a big thing across my shoulders. It's the thing I'm holding in my palm of my hand because we become so digitally reliant.
Yeah.
We just want to get away from it.
Exactly.
Right. We're going to get a break, come back, and we're going to talk about your business. Back from the break, and I'm here with Chris and Cameron Grant, the twins. Their business is called Unyoked, and let's unyoke the business. Let's know what it's about. So let's start with the demand, mm-hmm. as opposed to the product. Mm-hmm. What demand are you feeding? How do you find the demand? And how do you speak to the demand?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
We started the business to answer our own issue, as I mentioned before, and so the demand for us was that we were stuck in the city, we were stuck on our phone, we were getting spreadsheeted to death, we were working too
spreadsheeted to death. Yeah, I love that.
We were working too hard for other people, but not for ourselves. And Unyoked was an answer to that, and a remedy to the issues of modern life, really. And so once we launched Unyoked for our own itch, we found that everyone else was sharing, and it was actually quite a systemic problem.
But what was it? Tell me what is it?
It's overwork, it's overstress, it's overstimulation, it's pollution, lack of space, lack of clarity, lack of deep thought, instant gratification, and all these things that the modern world is throwing at us and in our face. Lack of movement, exactly.
So we're stationary.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and our brain is like that too. Our brain becomes stationary, our mm-hmm. personality becomes stationary.
Yeah.
I said it right at the beginning in the first place. Like for me, one of the greatest freedoms in my life and the greatest inspirational moments for me was always traveling.
Yeah.
And I come up with so many ideas. It was crazy. And what you're saying is this has become a – we've sort of been stopped. It's become more acute these days.
It has. It's a huge problem, and you can see it in mental health statistics and all sorts of things like that. And it's an interesting parallel you draw to travel, because it's actually one of the things Cam and I, we used to get away, you know, for sort of one holiday a year to somewhere awesome, to Chiang Mai or to Sumatra, and you get that tingle in the back of your neck. You get that freedom and that exploration. And we wanted to try and bottle that somehow and give people that within reach of the CBD. And so that's why we look for these awesome locations that have never been visited before. We stick a little hut in the middle of the wilderness, and you can get there, you can get the tingle on your neck, and you can come back and you get a little bit of that freedom and that you shed some of that weight from the city. So yeah, that's it's really what we're trying to do, provide that in an accessible way.
Yeah, no, I once watched a movie. It was Richard Gere was in it, and he was like a traveling salesman sort of guy. And then he started doing talks about, and he used to have a backpack, and he used to gesture about taking everything out of the backpack and just loosening the load, so to speak. And I thought, yeah, we pack so much shit into our backpack, a bit of emotional shit and things we think we can't live without, like structure and, you know, I'm always talking about structure, but at the same time, structure, you've got to be careful of. You've got to give yourself some relief from structure, and you've got to become creative and or just think about shit.
Yeah.
And probably importantly, just breathe for a start.
Yeah.
And just see something different and move, you know. I don't mean move in a sense of going to the gym. That's cool. But I mean actually move away to something new. You can come back to it. but move away. So it's nearly like you do a couple of psychologists, but or behavioral scientists in some respects. You know, like you end up doing your science degree, Cam. You're a behavioral scientist now, but because what you've zeroed in on is the needs or the demands in a behavioral sense for all of us, as I said earlier, particularly these days, and you've done it with a pretty, well, I won't undermine it when I say this word, but a simple product.
Yeah.
Do you mind explaining the product?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the I guess the product is the overall experience, but the element of it is the cabin. Yeah.
So yeah.
The cabin we see is it's a facilitator to living a better life. So instead of having the 9 to 5 and then having weekends which are filled with generally chores and then one holiday at the end of the year, we think people should tap in and tap out more often. So have a more flexible, go out, get some perspective, come back renewed, go out, recharge, come back renewed, go out, get that creativity that you're looking for, come back to the city and be at a higher performance.
Give me an example of, like, say I live in Sydney, give me an example of somewhere where I could go this weekend and what would I see when I get to my destination. Do I drive there? Do I fly there? Probably do both. But what do I find? Where am I?
Yeah.
So, in terms of the actual product itself.
Yeah.
And explain the experience for me.
So you drive it's all within 2 hours of a city.
Yep.
So that, and the holiday.
So the first thing is I drive there.
Yep.
And I'm going to be there in 2 hours.
Yep.
Great.
Because we wanted people to get there on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night. So it's midweek. We don't care about weekends.
Yep.
So it's about sort of ignoring that usual construct.
Yep.
But you get there, you park your car, you generally go down a few dirt paths and open and close a few gates.
You got to work for
large properties. You park your car. It's about a 200-meter walk through the bush from the car park.
You want me to walk?
Yeah, we want you to walk. We want you to put all that city shit back out of your mind.
What do I take with me? What do I do? I get a set of instructions about what I got to take with me.
Yep. Yeah. So basically, anything that you want to do, like we've got books and things there, but books or just food, really.
Food. Yeah.
That's it. Just food.
And clothes. Food and clothes.
And then you generally walk up a hill or you go round a bend or you go through this bush and then there's a cabin sitting there in a clearing.
Explain the cabin to me. What are we talking about here?
So it's like a minimalist cabin done kind of in the Scandinavian design. So do you know the term cabin porn? Have you heard that before?
No.
It's generally, it's not where the mind jumps to right away, but it's like...
Is there a chick waiting there for me?
It could be a good vertical, but no.
You thought about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
It's all these picturesque cabins, like little rustic cabins sitting there on a mountaintop or by a stream
in the middle of the forest. For example? Do you guys own the cabin and lease the land or something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you go to the landowner and you say, we've chosen your place and we'd like to pick this little spot and we will build and put the cabin there.
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
It is. Yeah. We searched through thousands of properties that have applied and we've got some strict criteria that we need to look for, and we look for the very best properties that give you that tingle on the neck, that sort of feeling of awe. And then we partner with the landowner and we provide a share of the revenue to them, so they're able to monetize some non-arable areas of land.
So it's a sharing, it's that typical, you know, modern day startup sharing of assets type deal.
Yep. Works in the sharing economy, definitely. Yeah.
But when it comes to the cabin itself, are they all the same, or what does it look like? I mean, we've got a glass roof, or how big is it? Is it 2x2? Or what are we talking about?
So they're minimal structures. It's a 6 meter by 2.5 meter cabin with a pitched roof. It's fully off the grid. So you've got your solar panels on the roof. It collects rainwater. There's a composting toilet and it's mobile. So we can wheel it in or out of anywhere, and it's very minimal touch, which is awesome. So we don't need to put in any foundations or any mains. And it allows us to unlock all of these properties which have never been accessible to this sort of experience before. In terms of the look, it's sort of plywood interior, that sort of like Scandinavian feel. We use sustainable natural materials, and it's got everything in there that you need. It's got all the amenities of it.
So the bed's made, the sheets on there.
Bed's made, sheets on there.
Is there a shower?
Yep, there's a great hot shower. There's a fully kitted out kitchen. We actually worked with some of the Three Blue Ducks guys when we first started, and they helped us curate the kitchen to have everything that we need in there to sort of cook like a professional chef. And then you've got stuff to cook on the fire outdoors. And
so it's an outdoor barbecue type deal?
There's a fire pit, yeah.
Because
it's a big part of the experience is doing things with your hands and doing things analog over digital. And
yeah,
doing
sort of like camping a little bit.
Yeah, it's bringing that experience to people and like a sense of achievement and, you know, cooking on the fire. And, you know, we've got cassette players instead of MP3 players or you know, anything digital. We've got hand ground coffee so you can grind your coffee beans instead of having instant coffee. And, and it's all about doing things with time and thought.
Yeah, and taking your time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So you got just let me think this through. So, I turn up with my food, and I change clothes, I guess. And I arrive there. The sheets, towels, shower, dunny, cooking things. I know there's a fire pit out the back, or at the front of the back, whatever. Let's say it's shit weather. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah, there's everything in there that you need and nothing that you don't. So the whole idea is simplifying, slowing down, getting away from all the stress. So if it's raining, actually the whole design philosophy of the cabin is to bring the outside in. So there's really big windows, lots of glass.
Like that.
It's made to be in the landscape, not on it. So if it's a shit day, you're cooking, you're enjoying coffee, you're reading, you're just looking outside to the wilderness, because the whole idea is that you don't see anyone and you don't hear anyone. So it's you alone in the wilderness. And you just contemplate things, you think about things, you have ideas.
So it's short stay too. I mean, I guess the idea is you go Wednesday, Thursday, or I mean, is that it works?
Or
is
two it, nights more or less.
Two nights, yeah. Two nights, 2 days or whatever, and the time it takes you to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the demand. I mean, what sort of marketing in this process? I mean, what are you doing in terms of marketing? So, you know, digital marketing, I guess, what we're talking about here, and social.
So we don't really do any like paid marketing at all. So we've got we had $0 customer acquisition cost for a long time. Luckily, it's a concept that just resonates with so many people that word of mouth is our biggest driver.
Do you allow people to use their social mediums to say, well, I'm saying this cool thing at the moment, blah, blah, blah?
I mean, Instagram is a big platform for us. So we don't do promotions, but it's such a good visual way of storytelling what it's all about. There's little cabins.
Because everyone's got a different story.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a big acquisition channel for us.
And then obviously you've got a website. So people have to come out and book. It's all e-commerce. So people are booking it through the website, I presume.
Yeah. We're not on any booking platform.
No.
So
good.
We manage the whole end-to-end process ourselves.
Yeah, it's great because that's a punishment. Also, they take too much.
Yeah.
And they ruin the experience. You know, we don't want to be a transactional accommodation company. We want to be a lifestyle brand, and there's so many chances to have meaningful touch points along the way that one of those platforms would take out.
So in terms of the design of the cabin itself, what inspired you there? I mean, did you see something on the top of a mountain in Sweden where they were singing the Sound of Music or something? I mean, what?
We did a lot of research and we pulled some inspiration from Japanese minimalism and cabins and the Scandinavian cabins, and then also Cam and I had this sort of cabin porn inspiration back and forth with each other long before we started Unyoke. So we had all sorts of pictures of amazing cabins around the world and just tried to take that romantic notion of a cabin and give you everything you need and somewhere that feels warm, and it's your home base for the landscape around it.
So when you say to me Japanese and Scandinavian, like the fusion of two is hard for me to imagine, but I think a minimalist but really functional.
Exactly.
Yeah, are we talking on the right?
That's what it's all about. Yeah. It's functionality and minimalism, but everything kind of has a significance. Like there's nothing there superfluous.
Well, Japan is very much that way.
Yeah.
I mean, every stroke has a symbolism in the art.
Mm.
In terms of your design, is this something you own the IP for? I mean, is this your own design? And was it designed locally? Did you sit down with architects or how'd you do it?
We do own the design. We've had about five iterations of our cabins to date. So, you know, we've had 7,000 stays or so, and we've received feedback from all of our guests, and we've used that feedback to iterate and build and
that's probably more functionality though. Like you need this or something.
It is this customer experience.
I mean the tap handles are too hard to hold.
Exactly. Yeah.
But they'd be only minor things. Or suggestions.
Exactly. We do own the IP, but it's important to say for us that the cabin's not the destination, it's the landscape and the experience around it. So the cabin is not supposed to be an attraction in itself, although they're super cool. It's not a flashy modern something. It's meant to be practical.
Just tell me about the Matthew McConaughey. I reckon he's a great actor. Tell me about the story there. What's the deal?
Yeah, there's a funny story around how we almost missed that opportunity. Really, we get a lot of approachment for brand deals and things from sort of mostly banks and car companies and those sort of things, and we try and tend away from those. And we have a folder where our team just puts them into. And so Matthew's team was trying to reach out to say, hey, we want to do something with you. And they were just getting flung into this folder with all the cars and the banks. And I think they'd been trying to reach out for 6 weeks. They tried a number of methods. And in the end, their PR company in Australia found someone that I know on Facebook, and he Facebooked me and said, hey, Matthew McConaughey's trying to get hold of you to work together on building a cabin. And so, yeah, it was something that we nearly missed out on there.
Did you build a cabin with you? Or what?
Yeah, we did. He flew us over to LA first, and we did some filming with him in LA, and then we worked together over the next 5 or 6 months, just via phone and video, on designing a cabin that reflected him and his likes. And then we launched that cabin together. He flew to Sydney for 24 hours and we launched the cabin in the Botanic Gardens here in the city. It's not there anymore, but we had a great event. And yeah, he's a real champ. He's a nice guy and a real
So where's that cabin now? I mean, is that part of your suite of cabins?
It is.
Yeah, it's up near Yarramalong, so about 2 hours north of Sydney.
Yep.
Yeah, sitting on a beautiful property in a pine glade. And you go there and, yeah, it's all decked out. It's like a whiskey room, essentially, like all done in his design. We co-designed it. But then you get a bottle of his special whiskey with every stay.
That's cool.
And yeah, it's pretty cool. It's called The Reserve, if you jump on the website Reserve. And check it out. Yeah,
okay, I'll look that one up.
Yeah. If you like a bourbon whiskey, then yeah.
Well, he does. I'm seeing him advertise it.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. We were sitting, when they flew us over there, we're lucky enough to drive down with some spare time and go to Joshua Tree.
Yep.
We were sitting up there watching the sun go down, climb these boulders and sort of sitting there and we're like, what the fuck? Like we're building a cabin with Matthew McConaughey, and like you rewind 2 years and we're sitting at our day jobs and having these little cabin on the side, driving down at night times and on weekends to do the work. And yeah, it's just one of those random things that comes along.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It's been an exciting adventure.
Great part of your story though.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got to build these things. So how many you got rolled out now?
We've got 17 live at the moment.
Yep. So how do you roll them out? So like, can you find 20 sites really easy and therefore you just plonk another 20 in there?
We can. We've got a backlog of 700 sites or so. And we're working.
So what holds you back by putting 700 more cabins in there?
So at the moment, capital has been our only constraint.
So what's one of these things cost around about?
85,000, something
to
like
build,
that.
Wow, yeah. But that's a lot.
Mm.
That's a lot of dough because it must be well appointed.
Yeah, they are. That's,
85,000 fully cocked.
Yeah.
Sheets, linen, blah, blah, the whole thing. Yeah, the whole thing ready for someone to open up and go and stay.
It's a little house, essentially.
Yeah. Mm. But it's only, 12, 15 square meters.
Yeah.
So that's a little house.
Yeah.
sort of a little house with all the tricks.
Yeah.
So 85,000, so it's capital intensive in that in that regard. So I presume what you do is you go and raise a dough. I mean, do people, like, say someone like me, do I go and invest in that one? And you say, Mark, you put in the 85,000, we'll build it, you guys will build it, and then Mark will split the profits between us and the landowner.
Mm.
Is that how you do it? Is that your model?
We've got a few different models that we're tinkering with. The primary one is that we share some equity in the whole company.
Yeah, you do equity at the other end. So you do it at the business end, like at the total, the whole structure. So I would say you would go and raise money.
Yeah.
And let's say you raise $1 million off program, say, I put in 100,000, that means I own a percentage of the total business.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, as opposed to you saying to somebody, look, I've got a place in Byron Bay, we've got a farm we found, the landowner says, cool, put it, here's a spot you can put one of these things. Who would like to bid to fund this one?
Mm. We do. We have used debt in the past as well, and that's more closely aligned with what you're talking about.
Yeah,
so that's on a cabin basis.
Yeah, so you pay a return to the capital investor.
Yeah.
Like a return, like 5-10%, whatever it is. You just have to compete with cash. So, I mean, if the cash returns 1% or less today, and if you're offering 5%, it doesn't sound like a bad investment.
No.
There's probably no upside, but it doesn't matter. It's sort of competing. There's no capital increase because if they're just a lender.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's probably better than putting their money in the bank where they're getting less than 1%.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the benefits of the economic environment right now.
That's going to stay for a long time. Yeah. So, I mean, why have you shied away from that model, the lender model, and gone into the investment model or equity model? Mm-hmm. Is it because there's more people is it just easier, or what's the reasoning?
At the moment, we're going two prongs. So we're actually raising some through this mode and some through that mode.
Some through equity and some through debt.
Exactly. Right. It's primarily just to limit our exposure to debt at this
stage. And also mm-hmm. dilution.
Yeah, exactly. And to limit our dilution, of course.
Yes. Yeah, because every time someone comes in, you've got to do a valuation. You have an arm wrestle on the valuation, the whole business, and then you get diluted no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
And depending on the environment, they'll think that, you know, investors will think that, no, I'm going to get it. I want a bigger share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will be our main going forward. Moving forward.
It's yeah.
mainly to get the operating history and I guess the comfort that manages risks for the debt providers.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
we have been small, but now we've already raised a successful debt fund. We're doing another one, and then we'll gradually scale up from there.
So can I understand the structure? Here we are talking about Andy's structure, but like, can I talk about the structure? Because, you know, business needs structure. Sure, we all try and escape structure by, you know, going to unyoked, but business has to have a structure. Mm-hmm. And your position, you've got 17 cabins on 17 sites. You've identified a further 200 locations, all within 2 hours of a city or a town.
Mm-hmm.
You need to raise, what have you said? You're saying to people who you're talking to, we want to raise enough to fill out another 20 cabins. What do you say? I mean, how do you do this?
Yeah, we've worked on some key strategic horizons and then the amount of cabins that are going to get us to those horizons. And
what's your next horizon? So you've got 17. What do you want to do next? 20, 50, another 20, 50?
Get us to 50 cabins.
50 cabins. Yep. So
it's another 33.
You need to raise enough money for another 33 cabins. That's 33 yep. times 80-odd grand.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the deal with the landowner? Does he charge you like a sort of a lease fee, or you just pay him a percentage? Or is it like a variable cost to you, or is it a fixed cost to you?
It's a variable cost, which goes up and down with the occupancy.
Yeah,
At the moment, we've been almost 100% occupancy since we launched, so it's been great. But yeah, if there's a dip, say when we had to do the lockdown and close the cabins in Melbourne, then the landowner's payment ceases as well.
Right. So how have you done it in Melbourne? Like, I mean, are you in Victoria now?
We are,
Yeah. And so I guess, like, when people couldn't travel more than 5Ks, if you're in the Dandenongs and let's say I live in, I don't know, Melbourne, I mean, I can't go there. Have you been affected or?
We have, yeah. We've had our entire sort of fleet of cabins in Melbourne closed during the lockdown, which, yeah, has been a little bit of a challenge, but it's allowed us to focus on some other things. And we've gone into the properties and worked with the landowners on, you know, doing some landscaping.
Because it's going to get mental once they open up.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's happening in Sydney because, I mean, I got a property in Byron Bay. I got a farm in Byron Bay and it's gone mental.
Yeah.
Like people, you know, because I lease part of it out and it's gone mental, absolutely mental. Like I've never seen it. Like I didn't have anybody there for 6 months, but now it's just people like climbing over each other. Like it's going to go crazy for you guys. I mean, where have you predominantly got all your cabins, New South Wales or Queensland or Victoria?
It's almost 50-50 split over New South Wales, Victoria. We've got a few more in New South Wales, and then we've got one in Queensland at the moment, but we're expanding there. And then these next round will go to Tasmania, to Byron, to Canberra as well.
You haven't got gradually one in Byron?
Not yet.
I mean, come look at my joint.
Yeah.
But it's funny, like the interesting thing about it is a lot of people love staying in this place because of the simplicity of it all.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, it's been something that people knew thousands of years ago. You know, there were the hermits, like literally they disappear out to the wilderness to live in a little hut because they'd be closer to nature. They'd cut away all the bullshit so they'd have better perspective and be able to focus on what counts. And we've just sort of forgotten about that as the cities have grown up around us and all this technology is invading and stuff. So we're really just trying to remind people of that. The scientifically proven benefits of getting out to the nature and sort of stepping away from it all.
Yeah. Step away from stimulation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be stimulated by not being stimulated. I mean, like, it's funny, all of a sudden your brain starts getting thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of a different sort of process. And I guess what I'm saying here to you is that it's about simplicity, reflection, breathing, which is sort of what you do when you go into one of your cabins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unyoked is about meditation. You might not be actually formally meditating, but it is a form of meditation.
Yeah.
I mean, we're actually just thinking.
Exactly.
Mind about stuff, being aware of the fact that I'm just grinding my coffee instead of just, you know, going up and saying, I have a, you know, espresso, please. You know what I mean? Like someone else gives it to you, shoves it in front of you, and that's something I dismiss. I don't even think about it for the day. It's very tactile too. I mean, yeah. Like mindfulness is a to me is a tactile thing.
Yeah, you use your hands.
We forget about how I'm using our hands, what it feels like.
Yeah,
you know, the heat of a fire.
Exactly.
As opposed to the
senses,
air conditioning. You know, like the heat of the fire, or more important, even if I just put a jacket on because I'm cold, actually feeling warm because I've just done something positive.
Yeah.
I actually love this idea. I mean, I like to live my life. I mean. I used to be a board rider. I mean, I guess to some extent I'm a cheerleader for you guys because that's how I live my life. I like to live my life. I haven't, by the way. I haven't this year. I haven't been to my own farm in a year, 1 year.
Gotta get up there.
Yeah, totally. I have a hankering. My mind is hankering to actually do what you guys produce. Right now, it's very appealing for me to get in my truck and drive 2 hours away and just stay somewhere. But I don't really want to go and stay – the greatest respect to these people in a fancy hotel.
Yeah.
I have no fucking interest.
No.
You know, like I just am lying up for breakfast at a buffet and all that shit. Like that's what I do when I'm working. That's work to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to get the same benefits.
And the whole idea is to stay in the cabin on the property. So we don't like we actually, funnily you mentioned hotels. We actually, the first thing that you'd land on our website back at the beginning was big letters saying this is not a hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
And we wanted to say it in more colourful language than that, but we had to step it back. But it's the idea is you go there and you stay there. You don't go and look at the local cafe. You don't go for local like sites and watering holes and things.
Yeah, it's
like
not about sightseeing and typical tourism.
No. It's about being, not doing. And the cabin is the space that lets you do that in your way.
Yeah,
whether
yeah.
it's to go and paint and be creative or whether it's just to sit and think. Mm-hmm. Like we try and get people to bring it back into their normal lives as well. Like we often tell our team, we're like, go outside and just look at the clouds for a while. You know, go walk around the block and just sit in the sun. Like don't do shit all the time.
No.
Take some time back.
It's actually back to basics.
Mm-hmm.
Like camping is back to basics.
Yeah.
To some extent, like sleeping under the stars is pretty cool too.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't think that way. But I think people are starting to move more in that direction. I mean, I think for me anyway, I mean, a lot of people I know are starting to think that way.
Yeah.
I don't want to stay in a hotel, and I've got a hotel, so like I'm not bagging hotels. But like,
yeah, and I think that change that you're talking about, that people are starting to recognize this and want these sort of things more. That cultural shift and those trends have really propelled our business, and it's just sort of it's a bit of right place, right time. You know, when
you think it's a trend towards authenticity is probably a good word. Maybe.
Yeah,
authenticity at the moment is pretty important.
Yeah,
and there's nothing more authentic than just simple bloody nature. Like,
yeah.
Cooking and eating and thinking and smelling and, you know, just feeling a breeze on your neck or hot or cold.
Yeah.
You know, they're the great experiences.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we want to experience authenticity. Well, I've carried on enough. Oh, yeah. Boys, what question do you want to ask me? You got a question for me?
Well, we had a few, but one of them we thought that you could help out with is like, obviously, it's a good problem to have, but in startups, there's obviously tons of ideas and all different things to do and different things popping up all the time. We wondered when you were starting out or in the early stages, like, did you apply any certain frameworks or how did you kind of think through prioritizing those ideas versus like new ideas versus focusing on where you're going? And
we've got so many ideas.
Yeah. Well, look, I have been through it and I, not only when I started out, but I'm always in this position. So in my opinion, one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made is trying to do too many things at once.
Mm-hmm.
So my Yellow Brick Road business, I tried to do a million different things in that. Like, you know, because I took the view, and it was very esoteric, but like I took the view that every Australian deserves good quality financial advice. Okay. So then I tried to build a business around that concept, which meant I had to touch on too many product lines. And right now I've discarded that view. Because I can't do that. And I'm just looking at one product, just mortgages. So, and I'm much more successful at just doing one thing really, really well.
Yeah.
Because I, as much as I wanted to be that person, and it's a big dream, I'm just not geared up for it. I'm not a bank. I haven't been around 100 years, although sometimes I look like it. I haven't been around 100 years, and or feel like. I don't have a balance sheet that's got, you know, $20 billion sitting in there to be, you know, pushed out amongst, you know, 30,000 staff. So it's just not possible. And so I think, to answer your question, I think do one thing really, really well. And then once that's up and running, it's got a great rhythm to it, it's profitable, you're at capacity, then consider doing the next thing. That's what I think. Do what you can do really, really well. and that you know there's a market for, and that you know that you can execute for. You have the capacity and the capital to execute for. And I mean, when I say capital, I don't mean just money. I mean intellectual capital, human resource capital. Mm-hmm. You can sort of, like, I could give you today, you know, $10 million and you could go and employ 50 people, but you don't have the capital. You still don't have the capital it takes to do it because you don't have time. Time is a large capital item. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is it takes a long time to be able to execute it. You can have the people, but it's still going to take you 5 years to get there. So you don't have the capital of time. So I've tried it. I've done it. I've failed. And therefore, for me, it's about making sure I don't fail for too long. And I mean, I did it for 10 years. I tried that for 10 years and I eventually sold the business off, the wealth businesses and the advisory business off last year. And I'm putting all my resources now into mortgages and my business is much more profitable, does much better. I'm much happier. My customers are much happier and I'm giving everyone a good experience in relation to my business.
Yeah.
So I think that's the ideas, they're the dreams. It's good to dream.
Yeah.
That's great stuff. But maybe you do that when you're in your cabin.
Yeah.
But when you're in your office, delivering what you can do best. Yeah. That's my opinion.
Okay.
That's what's worth for me anyway.
Yeah.
But guys, look, thanks very much. I love the idea. I think it's amazingly relevant today. Like, it's ridiculously relevant today. Mm-hmm. Away from the desk, away from all the interruptions and all the stimuli, and immerse yourself in a different form of stimuli,
mm-hmm.
and come back with feeling just, if nothing else, just come back re-energized and refreshed. I think it's brilliant. I love it.
That's all about.
Thanks,
thank
guys.
You. Thanks.
Nice
thanks
talking to you.
Pleasure.
Guys.
Cheers. Yeah,
great to meet you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.